Welcome to Disassembled, the official podcast of the Big Glasgow Comic Page, where we talk about news, reviews, and interviews in the world of comic books. I'm your host, Ian Lynn, and today I am joined, as always, by Alan Todd, who waved.
Hello.
Oh, there we go. Now we can hear you. Massimo Castelli.
Hi, guys.
And we are doing an interview. We're joined by a guest today. We're talking to Jamie McCarg. Did I get your last name right? I'm going to butcher that.
Yeah, you actually did. You did a lot better than a lot of the call centers who call me up randomly, so well done.
Even being American, I don't butcher every name. Jamie builds and battles robots, including producing some really great-looking replicas of the big bad house robots from the beloved Robot Wars TV series. So today we're going to talk to him a little bit about that, a little bit about his competing, just robots in general, building them, all of that fun stuff. And, you know, just starting that off, I mean, Jamie, if you wouldn't mind telling the audience a little bit about yourself and what you're known for.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say I'm particularly well known in the TV world. I've been on 3 episodes of the BBC TV show Robot Wars when it was rebooted back in 2016. I started off in engineering as my kind of main work basis there. And I got into that from Robot Wars when it was on in the original run back in 1998. I was 10 years old at the time, and it was this brand new TV show. I saw an advert for it, and I thought, that looks quite interesting. I might watch that. And it was Jeremy Clarkson that actually presented the very first series all those years ago. And I sat down and watched it, and I was absolutely captivated, blown away by it. I'd never seen anything like it before. I was jumping up and down in the living room with excitement when robots were going on fire or getting beat up.
The cadet response.
Yep.
There's something visceral about one robot smashing an axe down into another one. It's
exactly
satisfying.
Yeah, you know, these people that spend hours building these robots and then they go into an arena and we try and destroy them in 3 minutes or less. So up until that point, in terms of what I wanted to do when I grew up, I wanted to either, you know, a train driver was one option, a builder was another one, a Power Ranger, that was on the list as well.
You know, 10-year-old career goal, 10-year-old dreams. Honestly.
Yep. And then when Robot Wars came on, I was like, I really want to do this. I didn't realize at the time that professional roboteer wasn't really a career path that existed, but that in turn led me into engineering, which is pretty much the path I've followed since. And like I said, when the show came back in 2016, I finally got the chance to go on it. So yeah, that's pretty much been the journey from when it started to where I am now.
Well, Cinderella story. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, look, I would say being on 3 episodes of a syndicated TV show officially makes you more well-known than any of the rest of us. So
I was going to say, it's 3 more episodes of Robot Wars than I've been on. So
yes, exactly. Yeah. So basically, from being from the point of being a small child, you knew that you wanted to build killer death robots and eventually contribute to the downfall of humanity.
Yeah, thankfully, we haven't quite reached the downfall point yet, but it's probably coming somewhere down the line. So.
Yeah, the way last year went is we're on our way.
Look, man, I've seen Terminator many times.
Yeah, and I don't know whether me building robots will mean that they won't attack me, or the fact that I try and destroy robots will mean that they'll make me make me their first target. So who knows how it will go when the inevitable.
I think
robot,
it depends if they're self-repairing robots, because if they're not, I mean, you're basically going to be a medic.
That's true. I hadn't actually looked at it like that. Yeah,
silver lining.
Exactly. Yeah.
For one, we'd like to welcome our new robot overlords. Just if they're listening. Yep.
Exactly.
Yep. Nice insurance policy.
Speaking of, like, obviously, like, we're talking like a fictional sense of like fixing up robots and stuff like that. How much actually goes into constructing like a killer death robot to be used in like multiple fights or like in like a 3-minute fight, such as like on Robot Wars?
So the machine that we first built for Robot Wars, the first series that we were in. So the first series I started off, I was a teammate with someone else. He built the robot, and that was my kind of Robot Wars apprenticeship, if you like. And then the 2 seasons afterwards, I built my own one. I kind of splintered off and built my own one. So the second season was filmed in December 1 year, and I started designing in May that year. Got the first parts back in kind of June, July, and then pretty much every weekend all the way up to December I was working on it. Even booked a couple of weeks off work at various points throughout that second half of the year, just pretty much spend 8 hours a day almost. building this thing to get it ready.
Oh man!
So for potentially, you know, 3 minutes is maximum you'll get from one fight, but you might be well knocked out, destroyed in 30 seconds potentially. So got months of preparation, blood, sweat, and it could all end. Yeah,
so it's really
a lot of work goes into it, and a lot of money as well.
Extremely similar to human fighting, really. It sounds like. In that way.
Yeah, pretty much.
You spend months, you know, building a robot, and then you could get knocked out in a minute and a half. What's the workflow for that look like? I know I was watching your YouTube video kind of chronicling construction of your dead metal replica, and man, it seems like there's a lot of steps there. It seems like you outsource some parts, other ones you fabricate yourself. What's that general flow look like for you?
So it obviously starts off from the design point of view, first of all, deciding what weapon you want to use, whether you're going to have multiple weapons on your robot, how it's going to move, whether it's going to be electric drive, petrol powered, whether it's going to have wheels or tracks. So once you've got the kind of basic design in your head, you then start sourcing the parts that you think you're likely going to be able to use, and what's within your budget as well. One kind of in-between step that some people do and some people don't is use computer-aided design software, so SolidWorks or similar programs, to draw the robot in a kind of 3D sense, measuring up all the parts from specifications on company websites and so on, just tweaking dimensions until you get some looks that we've envisaged it being.
Right.
From that point, you then start buying the parts and the materials that you're using, so whether that's steel or aluminium for the body, whether it's some plastics are used, polycarbonate. There's a plastic called HDPE, which is the same material they make milk bottles out of, but it's actually a really good defensive armor. So you basically buy your materials and you start working on them and shaping them, cutting, drilling holes to start assembling it. And there are things that you will be able to do in terms of your own skill set, what tools you have. But like you said, there are some things you sometimes need to outsource. So you basically give it to someone else to do and then throw some money at them and throw the part back at you when it's ready. And one quite popular method of that is the parts that you've designed in CAD, you can create what's called a DXF file, which is basically a 2D top-down outline of the parts. And you can send it off to companies that cut it out in laser cutters or water jets or plasma beams. The benefit of that being that really kind of intricate shapes that you might not be able to manufacture in your workshop yourself, you can just send it to them, sometimes a week turnaround, a bit faster, a bit longer, depending. And they'll just send a pallet sometimes, depending on the size of the thing, of parts back. And it's quite satisfying unwrapping it and seeing all the parts already made there and thinking, that's half the work done.
It's like Christmas.
It pretty much is. It's Christmas to roboteers.
It's like here is. Get the parts in. These aren't necessarily Christmas. The new toys, but this is what I'm going to use to build my new toy.
Exactly.
I was going to ask as well. Seeing the terms of like the kind of more accessible 3D printing, like models and stuff like that, machines like that, has that made you like? Has it made it easier for you to build certain parts, or has it made it almost like harder because you're putting more resources and money? Like, what's the situation there?
I was curious about that as well, actually.
Yeah. So 3D printer. I mean, I only got my first 3D printer about a year ago, so I'm quite new to that game. But in the kind of robot combat sport hobby, whatever you want to call it, in the UK, there are various weight classes. So the one that's on TV is heavyweight class, which is 110 kilos. And you get smaller ones throughout those, going right down to ant weights, which are 150 grams. And there are what's called beetle weights, which are about that size, 10 centimeters, 20 centimeters or so, that weigh 1.5 kilos. So those two weight classes are quite useful for 3D printing stuff. Certainly in the ant weight class, the 3D printing is used for the chassis quite often. So someone will design it on computer and print it, and that's them got their chassis there. In the beetle weight class, there's quite a lot of force that goes through the robots, despite them being quite small and lightweight. So 3D printing is quite often used to supplement parts. So it might be a box that houses the battery and the speed controllers, or it might be some protective covers around the motors to make sure dust, debris or anything into them. But then as you go up the weight classes, 3D printing becomes less useful because it's not quite as strong as parts you could make from metal or plastic. It is quite good for prototyping parts. So if I want to design something on computer to get made by an engineering company, I'll probably 3D print it first and just make sure that all the holes line up that they should, and that the part does what it's supposed to do before I then invest in a company making it. So it's good from a prototyping point of view in terms of checking dimensions in the bigger weight classes. It comes in useful for ones in terms of parts and chassis and so on.
I'd imagine the heavyweight bots have a bit larger parts than those lighter weights too, so that's probably a bit less convenient for the 3D printing side of
Yeah, so the bigger parts are obviously heavier, so there's more load on fixings and bearings and tuning points and so on. And when there are robots that have spinning discs as their main weapon that impart kinetic energy onto you, there are insane amounts of shock forces that go through the chassis, through all fixings and so on. So yeah, in that case, the heavier the part as well, the more force it can be bore down on a fixing. And so 3D printing, that's where that would be bigger, heavier involved.
That makes sense. Speaking of those heavy robots and building them and making them smash each other into itty-bitty pieces, though actually it doesn't seem like they normally get smashed to pieces. They just kind of get disabled, more or less. What's it actually like? I mean, actually being competing in robot wars, whether it's the actual TV show or the more local circuit tournaments, and having something you made fight in a robot death battle.
It's very exciting, very nervous. You'll get butterflies in your stomach before a fight. It's odd that I get more nervous almost after a fight. Like, my hands sometimes shake, I think maybe just from the adrenaline rush.
Adrenaline dump, man.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like you said, you spend all this time building a robot, all these months designing it and building it and hoping that it's going to work right, and then your first battle with it, you don't know how it's going to perform, if it's going to do what it's supposed to do, or whether it's just going to go up in a ball of fire. Touch wood, it hasn't really happened to me yet. There's just fingers crossed. Yeah. But there's an insane buzz and nervous energy at the start, and then once the 3-2-1 activate countdown happens, it's like a switch gets flicked and you're just in the zone. All the nerves go away and you're just focused on the battle. And I've noticed that I'm not really aware of things like commentary as well. So at the live events, there'll be a compere describing what's going on in the battle. Completely shut all that out,
totally
subconsciously.
Tunnel vision.
And it's only when I watch fights back on YouTube or someone's recorded the fight, I hear what the commentator's been saying. So there's a very tunnel vision for 3 minutes or however long the battle is, and they said afterwards just that adrenaline dump you've either been destroyed or you've destroyed the other person.
Yeah. Do you guys what's kind of the testing for the robots look like? Like, what do you go through to make sure everything's functional and it's kind of
for the most part? Quite often, if it's a certainly for Robot Wars, when it was a new robot, it was being built right up to the last second. So the test, pretty much, they had a small test arena at Robot Wars, just off to one side. You could put your robot in to drive it around and get a feel for it. So that's, for a lot of teams, that was the first time that they...
kind of trial by fire.
Pretty much, yeah.
Awesome.
But for smaller weight classes, I've been competing in about 16 years now, so I'm developed the robots to a point where I know just generally going to be reliable, and I'll test them. I'll just give them a drive around the patio in the garden or something, and at the event I'll just make sure that everything can fine. But I'm pretty confident that once it goes into the arena, it's going to do what it's meant to do. And a big part of that is reliability, so just making sure that electrical connections are secured, making sure that your radio's got good connection from that point on, good, or whether it's going to be testing varies, so it sometimes be right last minute or sometimes it can be...
So you guys don't really like robot sparrings?
Not really. I think there was one year that I went to a friend's workshop and we kind of both built our robots together for an event, and we just had a few sessions out in the street just driving them around and crashing them into each other. that identified any kind of weak points, wires needed to be more secure or bolts needed to be tightened up. And I think from doing that, we both had one of our best ranking events in terms of where we finished kind of the rankings. So if you can get to do that, it's a huge benefit. But yeah, sometimes it's just trial by fire. Wait and see how it goes when you first move the joystick.
Gotcha. And Alan, I'm sorry. It looked like you were about to say something.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you were saying that you had the robots out in the street. What do your neighbours think of this?
My neighbours are pretty much used to it now because I've been building them for about, like I said, 16 years. The ones we had out in the streets...
You're the crazy robot guy.
Yeah, pretty much, yep. The ones we had out in the streets were what's called the featherweight class, which is about... it's 30 pounds, but it's 13.6 kilos of metric. So they're not too big. They're just like gigantic RC cars, really, that do a bit more damage than what an RC car does. I think the neighbours have just got used to it, of sound like bits of metal scraping over the ground over the years. So they... barely bat an eyelid, I think.
This is my insane robot scientist neighbor.
I mean, I was going to say as well, when you kind of mentioned the fact that you spend so much time on it, and you cover so much, you kind of test this out at home. It seems to be like, assumably, it's not your full-time job being a roboteer, but it's like, it must be a massive, massive hobby for you, or a massive part of your life. So like, how have you managed to like incorporate that into like day-to-day life of being a roboteer, but also maintaining kind of like normal working stuff going on?
Lack of social life, really. it's something that when I first started out, it was all encompassing. You know, pretty much every minute I was thinking, you know, what can I build when I've got time to do so. Latterly, since Robot Wars finished up in 2018, I've actually kind of wound down a little bit in terms of what I've been building. That's where I've now kind of transitioned to building replica robots, which aren't designed to go in and get smashed up. They're there to be on display, do demo events, and so on. So I've been able to...
Sure, you're not designed to take over the world, right? Got you. Yeah.
Yeah, these are the safe ones.
There's a kill switch, right?
Yeah. Yeah, at the moment, I still have control over turning the power off to them, but...
At the moment.
Like we said at the start, you know, how long is that going to last for?
We'll see.
But a lot of hours go into it, but I think I've got a good balance now between weekends where I want to build something and other weekends where there's nothing really on the to-do list, so just... Not obviously now in the current COVID climate, but before that, you know, just meet up with friends, have a chill weekend, or some recharge the batteries.
Are you planning to jump back into competition when this whole COVID thing is over someday? Or
yeah, I do still have the featherweight class robots. I've got a couple of them waiting, ready to go, and there are quite a few events that take place throughout the country over the course of the year. So they're quite good in the sense that they don't cost as much to run, don't hurt your back as much loading them in and out of the car or the van, but you still get a good buzz from them and a good amount of energy and bits getting smashed up. So I've got them ready to go, and I will, I think, get back into them to a degree. But now that I've built a couple of replicas, I'm quite keen to get them to the Comic Cons once they're obviously back up and running, and just have them. It might scare the little kids, I don't know, but these big spiky objects staring at them maliciously.
Maybe you could inspire a whole new generation of people to take up the Robot Wars kind of mantle and stuff like that, which could be good.
Yeah, well, that's one of the aims when I do the Comic Con events is to kind of make the kids have a fun day out, but also try and inspire them to be interested in engineering or take up engineering.
Army for taking over the world.
Yeah, and you know, I might not be able to maintain them all myself, so if I can train up the next bunch of maintenance engineers to follow me once the robot overlords come, then that's it. It's all forward planning.
You mentioned kind of earlier on about how you kind of your first season of Robot Wars, you were, I believe, part of the team, was it PP3D? Was
the name of the robot? Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then you kind of transitioned to kind of next season to being the team leader of team, is it Coyote?
Coyote.
Or Coyote, yeah. however you want to say it. What was it like then, going from being like just like kind of almost like the kind of part of a team to then kind of almost leading the team?
Huge pressure ramp up in terms of responsibility. Being part of the PP3D team, I was pretty much going to my teammate Gary. I was going to his workshop on weekends, and he would be making most of the parts. And he would be like, you know, can you do this part for me, or can you sand this down, or can you drill some holes in that? So he was dealing with all that side of things, almost like a manager from that point of view, which took the pressure off me. I could just rock up and do what he wanted me to do and then disappear and then turn up to Robot Wars and be like, yeah, I played a part in that. But then when it came to doing my own robot with Coyote, it was all the kind of management stuff swooping on top of that. So not only building it, getting it ready in time, but also making sure that I was getting the teammates involved as well, so they weren't feeling left out or anything. Making sure that I had, you know, organising hire of a van to take the robot from Aberdeen, which is where I was staying at the time, down to Glasgow for the event. And a huge pressure just to make sure that it worked, because I'd had these two teammates, first of all, and then another teammate in the following season. And they were expecting to get on robot, you know, turn up and be on Robot Wars. So there's a huge pressure on me to get the robot done, so that we didn't go there in production. We'd be like, yeah, you're not ready to go in, so we're going to substitute you for another team, and you'll just need to sit in the reserve list. And then obviously the robot itself performing in the battles, because you obviously want to make a good impression on the TV show as well.
Right.
So it was a huge pressure to make sure that the robot worked. Yeah.
Burns, so, scratches.
Yep. And also the you get through the first battle, and there's a huge pressure off there, but then you take it back to the pits area, which is where all the repairs happen, and you start seeing things that are broken that you need to fix, or batteries that need to charge, and you start making a list in your head of everything that needs done, and you've sometimes only got 2 hours to do that, which sounds like potentially a lot, but it can take a long time to dismantle things, fix them, put them back together again. So transitioning to team captain was there's a lot more to it than I potentially considered from a TV show side of things. So, but I wouldn't change it for the world. It was something it was something on the bucket list, something I enjoyed. So I've got that experience from doing that. So yeah.
But are you disappointed that it wasn't Jeremy Clarkson, or are you quite glad that it was not him and it was Darryl O'Brien?
I didn't mind either way, actually. When Jeremy Clarkson did the first season, there's a lot of, certainly among the fan base, there are not a lot of love for him for doing it. They found that he was quite kind of insulting to Roboteers and so on. I didn't find him too bad, but Craig Charles took over the following season and presented the next six series or whatever it was. So he was basically in the face of Robot Wars. And then when it came back in 2016, there was a lot of clamour again from the fans saying, are you going to get Craig Charles back to present it? But I think they were right to get new presenters. I think it moved on and evolved from the show it was back in the classic days. So, yeah, I was quite happy with Darryl O'Brien. He didn't do too much in terms of our interviews. It was the other presenter, Angela Scanlon, who was quite kind of not really known at the time when he was first appointed to it. But since then, she's done stand-in slots for BBC One Show, and she does, I think, radio shows as well. Does various other programs. So she was the one that did most of our kind of pit interviews and post-battle interviews and so on. So I think we only got Darryl O'Brien a couple of times, but it was quite surreal seeing him just walking about, having been used to him on Mock the Week and so on. And just like, oh yeah, it's just Darryl O'Brien's just walking into the cafeteria. And he's very tall as well. I mean, I'm 5'11", but I was almost looking up at him when he was doing the interviews with us. But naturally funny guy.
I saw him live. So I'm like, I was in the front row and I'm tiny and I'm looking up going, my God, it's like the Jolly Green Giant.
That's exactly it, yeah.
God, I hope you guys never meet me.
How tall are you?
I'm like, well.
If you can do the stupid feet and inches to meters conversion, because I'm dumb American, just about six. Well, you just said you're 5'11", so I'm saying.
Yeah,
just about 6'2".
Okay.
You're like 4.5 meters plus a McDonald's Big Mac. You're
5'11". I'm 2 meters plus a Burger King Whopper.
It's on the idea of like heights and stuff like that. I know you talked about like heights and size of the robots and stuff. What was Coyote weight class wise? Like, what size was it?
So it was the heavyweight class. I think in the first season we did it, it weighed 100 kilos. And then it got quite smashed up in that season and had to rebuild it for the following one. And at that point, I said to one of my teammates, I was like, well, it was 100 kilos last season, so we've got 10 kilos spare. So if you want to make a little mini bot that will go in the fights with us and just dart around, feel free. So he built that to be about 10 kilos. I rebuilt Coyote, put it on the scales, and it was coming in at 107 kilos. I was like, oh, right, okay. I've now got a robot that's over the weight limit. So
you better have called the tiny robot, Roadrunner. And then you would have had the big one being Coyote, because that's incredible.
That's exactly what it was called.
It's phenomenal. I love that. Right. I love that so much.
Even though we didn't have like the colour schemes, the paint schemes or anything, weren't done to be Roadrunner and Coyote. That's what we went for the naming convention. Naming it Coyote, first of all, was not from the cartoon, but just from the fact that it's a type of canid, a type of dog, and the robot was modelled after a dog. And then, like you said,
Your favourite Piper Perabo film, let's be honest.
Maybe. when it came to modelling the minibot, we thought, we have to call it Roadrunner. We can't not call it
naturally.
That.
What are you going to do, call it Tweety Bird?
Exactly, yeah. We didn't have any Acme TNT or anything to use in the arena, though. That was the only downside.
You know, that is the one thing maybe that could make Robot Wars more interesting, is just full-on explosive.
I was going to say, on the terms of what your robots were equipped, Coyote was I believe was the first one since season 4 to have a chainsaw attached to the back of it.
That is exactly right, yeah.
Right? So what was the thought process behind, right, so all these people have like these discs and these buzzsaws and stuff like that, why don't we attach a chainsaw to the back of our robot? What was the process behind
Evil
that?
They watched Evil Dead and they really liked it.
Yeah. I think one factor that came into play was nostalgia. So chainsaws were quite a popular weapon back in the first few seasons, like you said. They were never very effective back then, but they were one of those things that, you know, I'm going to build a robot, I'll stick a chainsaw on it. That was a kind of stereotypical weapon almost in the early days. But then I started to think about it, and chainsaws back in the day were petrol-powered, the ones on the show. but we made ours an electric one, driven by what's called a brushless electric motor. These are quite popular in RC cars and RC helicopters, and you get a great power to weight ratio from them. They're really small. I mean, I think the one we used in Coyote was about 40 millimeters diameter, but it put out about 2 kilowatts of power. So the reckoning was this material that I mentioned earlier on, HDPE, which is high density polyethylene. Although it's a plastic, it can usually be worked with in terms of drilling holes, cutting it, use woodworking tools for it, so hand saws, drills and so on. And we thought, well, a chainsaw is a wood cutting weapon, so it should technically cut plastic as well, which it did. And I never got to use it on the show because it was a terribly built weapon, and just the forces and impacts involved in robots nowadays, they're too fast, they're too powerful. The chain just kept on falling off, and we never got a moment to actually put the chainsaw down in someone. But there was method to the madness. You know, it wasn't just we'll stick a token weapon on the back. We thought, well, a chainsaw might actually be useful if we come up against a robot that's armored in plastic. And it did also channel one of the house robots, Matilda, from the original show. She initially had a chainsaw tail, and I thought, well, it's a dog design type robot, so put a tail on the end and just make it a chainsaw.
Well, it sounds like yours was It sounds like yours was an environmentally friendly death machine with its electronic chainsaw.
Yep, no fumes kicking about. It just simplified things because petrol engines are quite sizable and Coyote is quite a small heavyweight robot.
Right.
It just meant that we could power the whole robot off one battery pack, which is, again, it uses lithium polymer batteries now, whereas back in the initial days it was using sealed lead acid batteries, which they used to power golf caddy carts and so on, right, which are quite big and quite bulky.
Yes.
And lithium polymer batteries now, again, used in RC cars and helicopters. Again, great power to weight ratio. So I think our battery pack for the entire robot, 1 kilo, I think. Whereas back in the original days, it would be 20 kilos you'd be wasting on batteries. So a huge difference in that. And it just meant, like I said, no petrol engines to muck around with. Just everything on all simple things.
Convenient.
You
know, outside of Robot Wars, what other sort of competitions are available for aspiring robotics hobbyists?
So there are quite a few. There aren't many in Scotland. I say many, I think we've had two events, aside from Robot Wars, which filmed in Renfrew. But the majority of them take place down in England. There's a couple of roboteers who were on the original show and were also in the live circuit. They set up their own companies to do touring events. So they'll hire out a sports hall for a weekend and build a mobile portable touring arena, allowing the roboteers to meet up, socialise, and then have fights for a paying audience who come in and buy tickets to see this live show. So there are a couple of those that are quite tailored to the theatric element, so it's all about putting on a show for the audience. Fights might not necessarily be strict competition rules, but there's not generally too much there's no fixing around. There's not too much kind of trying to swing fights in a particular direction. Quite often the fights themselves are quite true and honest, but they'll try and be theatrical, like pyrotechnics.
A little showman, so you know, showman-like about it.
Showmanship, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, lights and stuff. And then there are other events which don't really kind of draw in an audience, but they're set up buy robots for roboteers just to go along for a weekend and have a competition, test out the machines, smash some stuff up, and just have fun. So the kind of nearest one we do is about 3 to 4 hours drive. It's round about the York area, which sounds quite a lot for some people, but it's not too far away depending on where you live in Scotland. Obviously, if you're up in Shetland, then that's a bit more of a journey to make. But if you're kind of Glasgow-ist and so on, it's about three and a half to get there.
I'd imagine about a 9, 10, 11-hour ride for me.
There or thereabouts, yeah. And a little bit of jet lag either side as well, just to spice
it keeps
up your
you know, it keeps you awake, it keeps you on your toes. That is not true. I've heard jet lag makes you horribly tired.
It doesn't seem to be so bad flying from the UK.
Could be difficult.
Yeah, I've never actually taken a bot abroad, but some people have, and it's not too bad actually in terms of getting through like, things like batteries and so on. You have to take on carry on luggage because you're not allowed to put it in the hold. But generally, I think
it's chainsaw yourself, sir.
that's just a purely cosmetic.
We're
going
to need you
to
put this death machine in the overhead compartment.
Sorry, but you have to have it tagged. It's a set of the customs rule. You have to have...
Yeah, it's over the 30 kilos, and it takes up a seat, so you're going to have to buy a separate ticket for it, sir.
Sir, excuse me, is this your death robot? You know,
so yeah, it's it's as long as you dismantle them, I think, in the suitcases and call the airline in advance and say, I'm bringing a death machine dismantled.
Yeah,
in
just tell them that it's, you know, just how else do supervillains travel?
Exactly, yeah.
These are the questions we have.
It's just polite.
Yes.
Yes.
It's exactly. all about manners. It's all about being courteous. Well, death robots that you actually build in your workshop are super cool, but we are a kind of comic book based, sort of all around nerdy things kind of group of people. So, not too jarringly move on to a different kind of robot, but do you have any favorite fictional robots or robot characters or anything like that?
Yep. Johnny Five from the Short Circuit movies.
Classic.
That's a favorite. I remember seeing that as a kid, and the bit, I think, in the second movie when he's getting attacked by the thugs almost brings a tear to the eye.
Well, small ones.
Yeah. So that was a kind of loose inspiration for a robot I built to take to Comic-Con events. It's a kind of mechanoid type robot, so it's basically a kind of wheelchair base and a frame on it. It's got arms, it's got a head that moves, it's got a little water gun attachment, which I can swap out for a bubble machine just to entertain the kids.
And definitely not a laser that we use to kill us all.
Not yet.
No flamethrowers.
Not
fine,
yet.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, so that's been to a few Comic-Con events so far, and it's really well received. I deliberately made it not look like Johnny Five exactly because I don't have the budget that the Johnny Five production team had to build up those robots, nor the skill or the patience to do like the tank treads and so on for it. So I modeled it on that, but it had some artistic license, and I called it RORI, which stood for Remotely Operated Robotic Individual. I thought, you know, give it its
own. We love an acronym.
Exactly. Couldn't not. I thought, I'll give it its own identity, but so far at events, most people seem to come up to it and go, oh, it's Johnny Five from Short Circuit. Sure, let's go for that.
I mean, if it looks close enough, no, I doubt very many people have like a direct picture of it in their head, so they probably kind of see and go, yeah, no, that's the thing I remember.
There or thereabouts, yeah. I've not watched the film for 10 years. That's sort of what it looked like, I'm sure. Which is fine, because that was what it was sort of designed to do, and it catches folks' eye and draws them into the events. And then, yeah, like I said, water gun or bubble machine just to kind of entertain the kids, squish the adults, something like that.
It's all about the kids.
Yeah.
All about the kids.
yeah, so that's one of my favourite ones.
Johnny Five. Sorry,
on you go.
Carry on. I insist.
The other kind of main favourite one is Wall-E. I think that's another popular one that's just quite endearing, quite an enjoyable movie. Obviously, you've got the R2-D2 and C-3PO from Star Wars. There are a lot of R2-D2 replicas around. Folk build them. There's an R2-D2 Builders Club on Facebook, just building full-scale, fully operational replicas of those. It's not, that one's not something that's ever appealed to me, I think, just because R2 is kind of, it's R2. It
looks a bit like a trash can, doesn't he?
Yeah, someone's done it. You know, loads of folk have done it already. Obviously, BB-8 came out when Force Awakens rolled around. I would like to maybe try and build one of those some point in the future. I did see one at a maker fair up in Glasgow, but I am hoping to. There aren't many Wall-Es around. There are a couple of full-size ones kicking about the country at the moment. Certainly none in Scotland that I'm aware of, so that's one of the aims is to get a Wall-E built for the Comic-Con events as well.
I would certainly watch a video series on either of them.
Yeah, it's
going to
be...
Most importantly, Wall-E or Johnny Five, or indeed R2 or BB-8, who would win in a fight?
I think it's got to be Johnny Five, really. He's got a laser over his shoulder. He was built for military operations to begin with. And I think what would happen is Johnny...
Pacifist over time.
Yeah, I think Johnny Five would blast BB-8 with its laser. Wall-E would come along and compact the remains, like trash compact the remains of BB-8 into its little cubes that it does, and then Johnny Five will just blow up. So yeah, my money's in Johnny Five. And
see,
then,
in terms of more
Bender from Futurama drinks a beer on the sidelines.
Yeah, I thought you'd say like in terms of more humanoid.
He's just
robots.
Sitting there. He's just sitting there chilling out, enjoying the spectacle.
That's it. Like with those, like would you like? would you see a future, and this is a weird kind of weird like science fiction question, like at one point that we fight robots, like if you've ever seen the film Real Steel, like humanoid shaped robots where you fight those robots in fights, like
I think that could happen. I think it might well be, oh, it'll be very far down the line. There was a show, an American show that was fronted by Chris Jericho from WWE, and it was sort of along those lines. So it was like humanoid-shaped type robots powered by hydraulics, and they would both move into the middle of a ring and kind of like Rock'em Sock'em Robots almost, trying to beat each other up, but it just didn't quite have the sophistication that obviously the likes of Real Steel or Pacific Rim Robots would have.
It's not quite time yet.
Not quite time, but there were a couple of guys in America as well that did something called Megabots, and they built huge gargantuan tracked robot that they sat in and piloted. I think sort of, I'm not, my science is actually a bit terrible here, but is it ED-209? Is that?
Yeah, from RoboCop.
Yeah, that's the
yes.
One. Yes. Which is it's got the legs and the kind of guns in the sight. So it's sort of like that.
Wait, you say it's compliant?
Yeah, yeah. So they built that, and I think a Japanese company built a similar one. And they plowed millions and millions of dollars into it, and then they had a kind of fight. They basically challenged each other to a fight, which was filmed for YouTube. And it was quite choreographed, I think, because of safety issues, obviously, because they've got pilots in these robots and arms punching them.
Jericho involved in this one as well? Or?
Sorry?
Was Jericho involved in this one as well?
No, this was just a couple of random guys, and I think they got... Yeah, I don't think they got anyone famous to present it. It was just some random presenter type person. And yeah, they choreographed it, I think, just for safety issues. I think they were wanting to make it a huge thing, but it never really took off to that degree. I think just because it cost, I think $3.6 million or something it cost to build the American one.
It's a lot.
But there will be a video on YouTube somewhere. I think it's Megabots versus, I think it's Sudobashi or something like that it's called. If you ever want to check out gigantic mechanoid type robots fight. But,
That's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for either Gundam or MechWarrior to become a thing. Like that's what I want to see in the future.
Or you know, the Pacific Rim Jaegers, yes, and then the Kaiju don't come, and it's just them. We've got like five or six of them, and we thought...
Let's Japan can make Gundams. We can make Mech Warriors here in America. You guys can make the Pacific Rim things. We'll just have them all fight in the Atlantic Ocean. It'll be beautiful. And then the robots can take over the world.
That's how the end of day start.
Yeah, that's the trajectory we're going to go on in terms of the robot takeover.
Well, real quick here. We're pretty close to 40 minutes, so we want to close this out pretty soon here, but just in the interest of kind of wrapping it back around to kind of our core audience, do you have any you know, real familiarity with comic books and superheroes, or any superhero films you're a fan of or anything like that?
I don't really read comic books, I'm afraid to say.
Totally okay.
I hope that doesn't get me lynched or anything.
Leave now.
Dude, you build robots for fun. I mean, not reading comic books is forgivable.
I can just see it. Jamie is being ejected from the call. so I don't really read comic books, but I'm quite kind of stereotypical or mainstream in the sense that all the Marvel movies that have come out recently, I say recently, obviously over the last decade or so.
Past 13 years.
Yep. Fan of them. Really enjoy them. Haven't really seen too many of the DC movies, basically because everyone seems to say they're terrible before I actually get around to watching them, so I tend to give them a berth.
Shut that up, says, Alan.
That said, the original, not the original, the Chris Nolan Batman movies, I'm a huge fan of those, I think, because they're really well done. They're quite heavily steeped in reality. There aren't too many crazy out there, you know, contraptions that he's darting around in. And even just from a filmmaking point of view, a lot of the stuff that Chris Nolan does and the effects are very practical based. You know, it's not too much CGI that he relies on.
Yeah.
So I like them for that point. But yeah, just quite kind of mainstream in that sense. Marvel, a couple of DC ones. Yeah.
That's totally fair.
Star Wars, all that sort of.
Just you know, one last question before we kind of close out here. What would be your message for any kind of aspiring, what would the word for it be? Robotists?
Roboteer?
Roboteers.
Yeah. Sure, yes.
People wanting to get involved.
Yes.
I would say patience is a virtue when it comes to this stuff. Don't be too downheartened if the first thing you try to build is a failure. Failure is a huge part of this process of developing your expertise, your skills, your knowledge, and just keep plugging away at it, and you will be able to get a robot that's functional into the arena. Again, it might get smashed up in its first fight, it might get smashed up in successive fights, but if you just keep on keeping at it, coming back, refining, getting more resilience and reliability into your robot, you will get there. There is, I'll just mention quickly, there's a website called bristolbotbuilders.com, which is a bunch of Bristol roboteers that have set this up. They run events in the Bristol area, but they've also got a shop which has got quite a good selection of parts and kits for the lower weight classes, so the ant weight class. They've got loads of parts there. They're really helpful guys. So if anyone is looking to get started, that's quite a good place to get parts and knowledge from. And there are also groups on Facebook are very welcoming. The whole community is very welcoming. If you've got any questions, folk are always happy. Yeah, if it's something you aspire to do, then absolutely jump in.
Well, really quick, before we let you go here, where can people find you online, and do you have anything you're working on to kind of look forward to in the future here?
Yeah, so the Comic-Con events and so on, I run under a name called Cali Creations. It's just a kind of team name, effectively, but we're on Facebook, facebook.com/ Cali Creations. That's C-A-L-E-Y, just for anyone not sure. On Twitter as well, just search for Cali Creations, on Instagram and on YouTube as well. I'm not a huge social media person in terms of keeping on top of things and posting regular content, but anything that I do build that I want to share, I'll be putting in that. And in terms of stuff I'm working on, I think the next thing I'm going to be working on, once I've got a bit of spare time and disposable income, is the full-size Wally that I mentioned. I've recently joined the Facebook page Builders Club for that and been getting loads of information. So that's going to be the next project. I'll try and do a video log for it, like I've done my Dead Metal replica on YouTube, because I think people find that quite interesting and engaging compared to just posting up pictures. But it's a wee bit of work in terms of recording the audio and editing it all together, cutting out all the bits that fluff up. But that should be something to look forward to in a few months, I'd say.
Very cool. Well, I think I speak for all of us when I say I really appreciate you coming on and talking to us about Death Machines that will someday be the doom of us all. And just to close it out here, again, thanks to our audience for joining us on Disassembled. Don't forget, you can find us on BigGlasgowComicPage.com. where you can find reviews and news. We're also on BGCP Comic Con on Twitter and Instagram. You can find us on Facebook, and you can find clips from the show on YouTube under the same name. And with that, we're going to bid you adieu and hope you all have a great rest of your week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you very much, guys. Cheers.